Being back, an almost overpowering feeling of dread, I peered into the tinted visor of Alex's helmet, more than half expecting to see a skull leering at me. Nothing. The helmet looked empty. I pushed my own fishbowl right up against the visor so my lamp could shine into Alex's helmet. There was nothing inside to be seen.
"Is that him?"
Marguerite asked in a hushed voice. Startled, I turned to see her standing behind me. I said, "It was him. It was." The Cycle of Death. There is a powerful difference between knowing something intellectually, up in the front of your brain, and seeing the truth of it with your own eyes. I had known that Alex was dead for more than 3 years. Yet when I finally saw that shriveled, seared spacesuit, saw his name stenciled on its chest, saw that his helmet was empty, I knew finally and utterly that Alex was dead.
"I'm sorry, Van," Marguerite said gently. "For what it's worth, I know what it's like."
I nodded inside my helmet. She had lost her mother. I'd lost the man who'd been a brother to me all my life. But there was no time to mourn him.
"We've got to get inside the suits and see if there's any organic material still remaining," Marguerite said.
To her, this was not a personal loss, not a tragedy like her mother's death. This was a problem in biology, a chance to learn something new, an opportunity for adding to the human race's store of knowledge.
"When bodies are cremated in high-temperature furnaces," she told me, "there are always bits of bone and teeth in the ashes."
"Even when they've been burned for more than 3 years?" I asked.
"We won't know until we've opened the suits and looked," she said firmly.
"It would be best to open the suits in vacuum," she said. "That would keep the level of contamination down as low as possible." So, keeping my sorrow to myself, I started to help Marguerite pump the air out of the pod, to turn it into an airless biology laboratory. It actually helped, having something to do, a goal to work towards. In a way, it eased the pain of Alex's death for me, a little. But we had hardly begun the work when the cargo bay's loudspeakers blared out, "Duchamp and Humphreys, report to the captain's quarters immediately." We were both outside the pod, on the floor of the cargo bay. I glanced at Marguerite, who had turned to look up at the loudspeakers even before the echoes of Fuchs's demanding voice died away. "Let's seal the pod first," I said.
"He said immediately."
"Immediately after we seal the pod," I insisted. "I don't want to take the slightest risk of contamination." She agreed, reluctantly, I thought. Then we left the airless cargo bay, peeled off the spacesuits, and jogged up to the captain's quarters. I was shocked by his appearance. His face was gray, pallid, his right eye nearly closed. He looked tired, weak, as he sat behind his desk. His bed, which had always been made with military precision, was a wrinkled mess, covers thrown back, pillows sagging. I noticed that his dog-eared copy of Paradise Lost was open in front of him. He looked up from it as Marguerite and I took chairs before the desk. "How's it going with the bodies?" he asked in a low, weary voice. It seemed obvious to me that he'd had another stroke, perhaps more than one. I glanced at Marguerite. She did not seem surprised at his condition, as she told him what we were planning to do. "Look for remains, eh?" Fuchs muttered. "Present an urn with his ashes to his father? Is that what you want to do?" Marguerite flinched as if he'd slapped her.
"No. But if the prize hinges on finding Alexander Humphrey's physical remains..."
"An empty spacesuit with his name on it won't do. Yes, I see your point." Fuchs turned his gaze to me. "It would be just like Martin Humphreys to renege on a technicality like that."
I saw pain in his eyes. They were rimmed with red, sleepless. In my mind's eye, I saw that molten chasm splitting open down on Venus's surface. Before I could say anything, Fuchs straightened himself in his chair and announced,
"We're climbing into the clouds. In another 11 hours, we'll be entering the top cloud deck. The one with your bugs in him."
Marguerite said,
"They're not my bugs."
He gave her a sardonic smile.
"You discovered them. You named them. You'll get a Nobel Prize for them. If they don't chew us to pieces on our way up."
"Is that a real danger?" I asked.
He shook his head, just the barest movement. Not if we go through at maximum ascent rate. We'll drop all remaining ballast and climb through that layer as fast as we can.
Good, I said.
He glared at me.
I'm so pleased that you approve, he said, with something of his old sarcastic fire.
We should rendezvous with Truax, I said. My medical supplies.
I'll put you off on Truax, all right, Fuchs said. But that escape pod and your brother's remains stay here, on Lucifer, all the way back to Earth.
Nodding, I replied.
Understood. I'm going to need you on the bridge, mister. He stopped, made a face that might have been a grin or a grimace, it was hard to tell which.
Mr. Fuchs.
I felt my cheeks flush, but I managed to say, Yes, Captain.
He stared at me for a long, silent moment, then turned back to Marguerite.
Can you carry on with your biological studies by yourself for a day or so?
If I must, she said, almost in a whisper.
It's only until we establish orbit, Fuchs said. Then you can have him back until he's ready to transfer to Truax.
I said, Perhaps I could stay here on Lucifer and have Truax ferry my medical supplies to me. That way I could continue to assist Marguerite.
Fuchs arched his left eyebrow at me.
Perhaps, he conceded.
I'll suspend the bio-work until we're in orbit, Marguerite said.
Why? He asked.
To attend to you, she answered.
I'm all right.
You're dying, and we both know it.
Dying, I gasped.
Fuchs gave a snorting laugh and gestured toward me.
Now he knows it, too.
Marguerite said, He's had at least 2 minor strokes while you were down on the surface. I'm doing all I can for him, but if he doesn't rest, he'll—
I'll rest when we reach orbit, he said. Now get to your duties. Van to the bridge. Marguerite, back to the cargo bay and that pod. It's my ticket to $10 billion.
We both stood up, but Marguerite said, I'm going to the sick bay, and you should come with me.
Later, once we're in orbit.
Your strokes are getting worse each time, she railed at him. Don't you understand that? It's only a matter of time before you have a fatal one. Why won't you let me help you? I can bring your blood pressure down, put you on blood thinners.
She ran out of words, and I saw tears brimming in her eyes. Fuchs struggled to his feet, or tried to. He got halfway up, then sank back into his chair again.
Later, he repeated. Not now.
And he waved us toward the door. Outside in the passageway, I whispered to her,
Nobody dies of strokes anymore.
Not if they have proper medical care, Marguerite agreed. But I don't have the experience or the facilities or even the proper medical supplies to take care of him. And he's too stubborn even to let me do what little I can for him.
He's got to run the ship, I suppose. She shot me a furious glance.
That Amar Jagal woman can run the ship. But he doesn't trust her to get us through the bugs. He doesn't trust anyone.
Before I could think of what it meant, I said, He'll trust me.
You?
I'll take over as captain, I heard myself say, as if I believed it. You get him down to the sick bay and do what you can for him.
She stared at me disbelievingly.
You can't—
But she didn't finish the sentence because I was already stepping back to the captain's door and rapping on it. Without waiting for him to answer, I slid the door back and strode into his quarters.
Captain, I—
I stopped dead in my tracks. He was still in his chair, but bent face down over the desk. Unconscious. Or dead. Back in the clouds. I helped Marguerite lug Fuchs's comatose body down to the sickbay. She had been tearful when she'd been arguing with him, but now she was dry-eyed and all business.
You'd better get to the bridge,
she told me once we had him lying on the table.
Right, I said.
But Fuchs opened one eye slightly and pawed at the sleeve of my coveralls.
Tell Amar.
His voice was terribly slurred, his face twisted into a rictus of pain.
Don't worry, I said, grasping his shoulder. I'll take care of everything.
The bugs. Sharp angle of ascent.
I nodded as reassuringly as I could.
I know. I'll get the job done.
You did okay down on surface.
I forced a smile. Praise from him was vanishingly rare.
Thanks.
Then on impulse I added, Father. He tried to smile back, but he couldn't. He mumbled something.